Just one story again. In this week's edition of the news, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits has completed a capital raising that values the business at $500 million Australian dollars. This valuation has been achieved in less than 2.5 years of trading for the Australian company founded in Sydney in 2019. It's now on track to become the fastest independent beverage brand to reach unicorn status, meaning a valuation in excess of $1 billion US. There's been no shortage of naysayers about the concept of non-alcoholic spirits, and I'll admit to being a little sceptical when Liars founder Mark Livings first told me what he had planned a few years ago. He says this latest funding milestone is clear evidence that non-alcoholic spirits are here to stay.
It is category defining. It's the most significant in the non-alcoholic spirits category to date, at least publicly. It really puts the category on the map, and we're really starting to see, a change in the conversation, not only with the trade, but also with major retailers with regards to supporting our category as well. So I think a raise of this materiality shows that the category truly has potential, and we're actually quite honoured to be the one to be out the front at the moment. So it's a brilliant moment for us and a brilliant moment for everyone who's operating in this space. The second thing for us, it's real validation that the last 2 to 3 years of what I'd like to say are pretty superhuman efforts by my team have been worth it. We've taken the business through the pandemic and rocketed out the other side. Having some more petrol in the tank for us to use as our runway to, you know, transform our business from, a beverage scale up into a true multinational beverage company, it's a really great feeling. And we're really positive about the future that's coming at us.
I haven't run the numbers, but I think in Australian dollars, it must be about $500 million valuation. What's the significance of how quickly you guys have managed to achieve that number? I certainly can't think of anything in the beverage space that's come close to it. And I would have thought that even more broadly in other sectors, nothing's happened quite as quickly as Liars has.
Yeah, it's typical of, the novel food and beverage sector. We've seen companies move at this sort of pace before in the alternative protein space, so Impossible, Beyond Meat. We've certainly seen companies move this pace in the dairy alternative space as well. Oatly is probably the best example of that, which recently publicly listed. So for products that are operating in the sector, which is powered by some pretty considerable macro trends, the health and wellness trend, those permissible indulgences where people are looking for something that's familiar to them that could be considered sinful, and I'm putting that in inverted commas for all of the categories. People are looking for healthful choices, and they're finding their way to products like ours. It's not a typical beverage company. We're not growing like a typical beverage company either. We are in hyper growth, which means, you know, compounding it over 300% year on year consistently now. So it's a very, very atypical beverage company. The one thing I will say is we built the business to handle this type of pace of growth. So I think we're sort of pioneering, at least in the beverage sector, certainly in the spirit sector, a new method for building and scaling businesses. And we're really adopting the tools of the Silicon Valley-style software companies in order to do so. There's a seminal work called Blitzscaling, and we sort of consider that work our Bible. And you can see some of the results that we've had. A 60-country footprint in less than 2 years. The revenues that we're banking and the growth is all pointing to a really different method of founding and scaling a beverage business.
So, I mean, in summary, there's obviously a huge amount of excitement in the investor community for what Liars is doing and the sort of potential that these products have on a global level.
Definitely. And look, the same, just to bring it back to those other analogs, the same level of excitement exists in those other sort of better for you categories as well. We are, a truly disruptive force to a traditional multi-billion dollar international industry. If we follow the same levels of penetration that something like, plant-based dairy alternatives have done, That went from sort of 1 to 1.5% penetration of total dairy. And across the last 10 to 15 years, that's moved into the mid-teens. So it's, you know, taken an enormous chunk of market share from a very established multi-billion dollar industry. To frame that up, the international spirits market is worth around $300 billion in revenue per year. And of course, if we took 10 to 15% of that, we're a $30 to $45 billion a year industry in US dollars. So it's a considerable prize if the same analog plays out in the spirits category as has done so in the protein alternatives market and in the alternative dairy market as well.
There's plenty of other non-alcoholic spirit brands that have hit the market in recent years. I'm sort of gathering that none of them have got the same sort of traction that Liars has managed to.
That would be correct, and we count now more than 250 international alcohol-free spirits brands around the world. There's a couple of things that have made Liars Liars, I guess. The pace of our geographic expansion is really unprecedented. I'd say unprecedented certainly in the spirits market, but for the broader consumer products sector, I don't think we've seen any business build a 60-country footprint. That was very deliberate from our team and our strategy. We wanted to catch the updraft of that demand that's swelling for healthier alternatives. So getting a footprint into as many markets as possible was really important. So I guess that's the first thing that investors are valuing. The second thing is we have a very clear liquid quality lead. We've got more than 300 international wine and spirits awards to our name. And that's incredibly credibility building, not only for our brand, but for the category, showing what the category is capable of. And to be validated by industry peers that have been judging wine, spirits, beers for their lifetimes is really gratifying and helps cement our category into one of the must-have things for your bar or for your liquor store or your supermarket. And then I guess the third thing is there's a lot of IP in our business. Our methods for creating our liquids that we have, a lot of that's proprietary. And you may have seen our entry into the Middle East recently. That was courtesy of a breakthrough in de-alcoholization that no other business has access to or has used. And it brings our products at the same quality in line with the regulation requirements of the most regulated beverage markets in the world, which include the Gulf states. So, not only are we, you know, moving quickly into established markets, but we're also pioneering and certainly in the vanguard of emerging markets where people don't really know what the size of the prize is, but do see huge potential if we hit a home run in. So I guess they're the sorts of things that are driving that valuation for us.
What are the biggest movers in your product portfolio?
What's really interesting, James, is because of our broad portfolio, and we were mocked initially when we launched so many. People called us mad and insane and supply chain complexity and all those sorts of things. But having such a broad portfolio gives us a really unique view of the world. The broadness of the portfolio and the geographic footprint really shows us how people want to consume the category. And the one thing that we've learned that we suspected when we started, but we now have proof for, is people want to consume the alcohol-free spirits category how they consume the alcohol category. So there's two reasons for that. So one, people's palates become accustomed to flavors over an adult lifetime, and they look for those if they're moving out of the alcohol sector. And the second thing, and this is most important, the vast, vast, vast majority of consumers that are coming into our category also enjoy alcohol. We're not addressing a teetotaler market. We're addressing people that are moderating their existing alcohol consumptions, but they don't want to give up their occasions. They don't want to give up their moments of human connection, and they don't want to give up their daily rituals. They might see the end of a working day off with a gin and tonic, but on a Sunday night through to Thursday night, they now have the option to do that with an alcohol-free gin and tonic, which can help them achieve whatever their goals are in life, be them professional or personal.
You've obviously got some data on that. Can you give me any more info on the different customer segments that there are for Liars?
It's an interesting one. I'll talk about the variants first. So it probably won't surprise you to learn that in the United Kingdom, gin is our best seller. And, you know, that's 30% of traditional...
Sorry, you mean London Dry Spirit.
London Dry Spirit, right? Yeah. So our...
You can't call it gin, can you?
No, we can't. And do you think the gin council or whatever the professional body is of concerned peers are very defensive of their existing nomenclature. And that's another discussion that we can have.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the consumer's already moved and started calling it non-alcoholic gin. But our homage to gin, our dry London spirit, as we call it, that's our most popular product being sold in the UK, where the traditional spirits market is around 30% of traditional spirit sales are gin. If we jump across the pond to the United States, it won't surprise you to learn that our best sellers are things like bourbon or our Italian bitters. So it really mirrors to exactly what the consumption preferences are of the certain geographies. As to Australians, I'll just throw in our rum sell particularly well in Australia as well. But the other part of your question is who's consuming these? And we still can't really put a finger on it. And that's because the scope of consumers coming into the category and enjoying products like Liars are very broad. So we've got millennials that are not coming into the alcohol category at the same pace as the generations before. And when they are in the alcohol category, their consumption is actually significantly lower from the generations before. So we're finding a lot of younger people come into our category. They still want an elevated, sophisticated flavor profile, but they're specifically electing to reduce their alcohol intake. My generation, your generation, us Xennials, Gen Ys, Gen Xs, we're cadencing in and out of the category. So we're the generation most likely to take a month off and then go back to our normal drinking behavior and then take another month off chasing a fitness goal or doing something and then go back to our normal drinking behavior. So I guess what's the biggest misconception is that it's a slow, consistent decline, but of that big population chunk in the middle, which is our gen, it's a cadence in and out. And if we do that 3 months of the year, all of a sudden 30% odd of your spirits consumption is been wiped away from what you would normally consume in a year. So that's an interesting thing that we've observed. And then, of course, at the top end of the scale, we've got the boomers. And a lot of those... consumers are leaving the category because of concerns with regards to either health or longevity. So there's a number of reasons. And I guess the last thing I'll say is it transcends international and cultural borders. Our business is having extraordinary success selling into places like, you know, mainland China, where we seem to be the only non-alcoholic spirit in town, South Africa. And we even sell into the Baltics and they're doing extraordinary volumes. So I guess we really need to throw out all the preconceptions of what people's relationship with alcohol looks like and what potential this category has, because it's shown to be pretty considerable and a lot of these data points are incredibly surprising to us, but we're leaning in.
I suppose the most recent stuff in terms of NPD, and it's NPD for Liars. I mean, everything's still NPD, really. You've only been going for a couple of years. But the RTDs are obviously a big one. And also there's a sparkling, non-alcoholic sparkling wine as well. How far do you kind of see yourselves potentially moving out of the spirit alternatives?
Yeah, it's a good question. And our hand was sort of forced with regards to starting the sparkling wine project. The reason for that is we've got two beautiful Italian-style bitters. One's a Roman-style liqueur, one's a Venetian-style liqueur. I guess homages to Campari and Aperol is the key liqueurs in those portfolios, in those categories, sorry. And we couldn't find enough non-alcoholic sparkling to carry the potential of those products forward in the geographies in which we were operating. So instead, we tried to get people to, you know, make additional non-alcoholic sparkling. There's a few great brands out there, but they're at their capacity limits. So we took, I guess, our fate into our own hands. The spritz serve is so monstrous globally that we decided we needed a vehicle to help carry those liqueurs forward. So we set about creating our own, and By all accounts, it's a beloved product. So a bit of an uncovered base for us. We really had no intention of moving with any kind of intent into the non-alcoholic wine space. But I guess our first move has been a really good one. The second thing is, look, the world drinks differently. And what we're learning is, you know, people are seeking non-alcoholic alternatives to products they love. So, you know, there's quite a few in the tail. Perhaps we'll look at an Amaro for Central and Eastern Europe. Perhaps we'll look at a Pisco for LATAM. The possibilities are really endless. And wherever there's a spirit that's doing significant enough volume and it's got critical mass of consumers that are receptive to the category, I guess Liars could play a role. So we're certainly not stopping our innovation and our research. But the RTD space, as you mentioned, was a natural progression for us. We've all seen the RTD boom in the traditional spirits market. And exactly the same things are driving us forward. People are looking for convenience. They're looking for a serve on the go to have, you know, in outdoor occasions or take to other people's houses for those sorts of social occasions. So the non-alcoholic spirits category, we have equally receptive consumers looking for that convenience in their serve. And it's been a pretty extraordinary launch. It's in mature markets like Australia, we've seen close to 50% of our revenues derived from the RTD portfolio already. So it's doing a really great job for us, not only from a revenue growth perspective, but the thing that we suspect that we haven't tested yet, it presents a lower price point for people to come into the category, and people can have their first experience with non-alcoholic spirits in this way. And it helps them overcome what we now know is the biggest barrier to consumption and people enjoying these products is they don't believe they can taste good. And if we can give them a great first experience in one of our RTDs, we can then bring them into our core range. So it's been an awesome product with benefits simply beyond the revenue growth.
Now, you guys must be a pretty attractive acquisition target for the big multinational spirits companies, and surely that's the end game here. Surely there's going to be a moment where that will make more sense to your investors to sell the business rather than raising more capital to keep on going. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes and no. I'd be lying to you if I was saying that we weren't actively thinking about what our future looks like. However, I will say a couple of things. First thing is, recent history shows that you can go it alone as an independent. Two really great examples, Tito's Vodka in the United States is the number one selling vodka, completely independent from a major multinational company. And we've seen a disruptor to what was a very, very comfortable duopoly in Fevertree, turning the mixers market upside down and then disrupting it and causing mass fragmentation. They're a very successful publicly listed company in the United Kingdom now, still independent of any beverage company that's a multinational and delivering great results profitably to their shareholders. So taking the business public or continuing to run it privately is, like Tito's as an example, is a consideration for us. Equally, we may find that we reach our point of decreasing returns to scale, running it independently, and we need the muscle and the machinery of a major multinational beverage company as well. But the last point is we're having a really good time. We're really enjoying this, excuse the pun, this drinks adventure that we find ourselves on at the moment. that was terrible.
Nah, come on.
That was rubbish. But we really are having a good time, and it's a bit of a dream come true. We're working on a brand that we've built ourselves from scratch, and we're taking it to the world. And it's whilst we're all really tired, it's everyone's quite elated, you know, turning up to work. And I guess to borrow from the great Warren Buffett, everyone tap dances to the office at the moment. So we don't really want to see that dynamic change anytime soon.
Mark Livings of Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits speaking there. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.